The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Champions League controversy. UEFA struggling to arrange a draw. Maybe they should have asked Italian clubs at the end of the season. But anyway, we'll discuss what came out when they'd finished arse-shoving about and then get all the latest league news from Germany, France, Spain, Italy and beyond, from the Madrid derby to Bronx cheers in the MLS Cup and Ronnie Dyler's push-ups. It's all in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Listener, so good to have you with us. I'm sat here with Alvaro Romeo, Julian Laurens, Raphael Honigstein and James Horncastle on the afternoon of Monday the 13th of December. Hello to you, everybody.
Hello.
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 Lovely stuff. Yes, that 13th of December, the one with the UEFA draw that happened twice with a lap with a safety car in between. Rafa, you just spent the last hour answering people on social media saying, why couldn't Liverpool play Villarreal?
Because that would have left Inter playing either Juve or Real Madrid, which both was impossible. So Liverpool had to be kept out.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so they did the draw, and you probably know this, listen, but if you weren't following all the action from Neon Live, lunchtime on Monday, they did the draw, and then it emerged that one of the teams had been put in the wrong pot. Because Man United shouldn't have been in with Villarreal. Let he who has never put his balls in the wrong place throw the first stone at UEFA. Mistakes can happen. The important thing is they redid it. And I'm going to say maybe. Did they redo it better?
Depends what club.
Depends, yeah. Depends, I think Florentino Perez does not think so.
No?
No. I'm not sure PSG do either.
Right, okay. Well, we'll get to the draw in a second or two and break down what awaits us come the spring. But how about we start with the traditional round of moments of the weekend with Paddy Power. Jules.
Well, I think it has to be Kylian Mbappe's one of the two goals he scored against Monaco, which was his 100th since joining PSG in December 2017. 100 goals, that's a lot of goals. Only Ibra and Cavani have scored more than 100 in the league. That's in the league, by the way, for a PSG player. I think Kylian is on 145 in all competitions. So, well done, and I guess his former team, Monaco, as well.
Oh, yeah. Narrative. Alvaro.
I think it has to be Luka Modric in general and his game against Atletico de Madrid. I mean, his performance was phenomenal. It was a combination of athleticism, competitive edge, quality, and he was running a lot as well. And Ancelotti said after the game that he had been spectacular with the ball and without the ball. And probably Carleto, a former midfielder, knows more or knows a thing or two about midfielders. Luka Modric, at the age of 36, he ran the Real Madrid derby.
Excellent. James Horncastle.
Well, let's go back to Friday night, the Derby della Lanterna, because Samp won it and after an incredible week in which had started with their owner, Massimo Ferreira, going to Milan to talk to Dejan Stankovic about becoming the new coach of Sampdoria, only Ferreira was busted by police. He was arrested as an investigation into his financial affairs looms. He was put behind bars. And so Roberto De Versa, the Sampdoria coach, stayed in charge and won the biggest game of the season for Samp against Genoa, and then had the dignity and the grace to dedicate the win to Massimo Ferrero, who was watching, I think, in his cell in the San Vittore prison.
Yeah, judging by the illustrations in the Gazette, it looked quite plush.
It had an ensuite by the looks of it.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like. Yeah, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice. Anyway, but crime doesn't pay in that. Rafa.
Havard Nielsen, James. Who is he? Well, he is the goal scorer for Greuther Fürth in their first win of the season after 12 defeats. They finally did it.
Jetzt ist Nielsen im Strafraum. Nielsen und der Ball geht irgendwie da rein. Da führen sie. Um 16:43 haben sie 4 Punkte in dieser Saison.
This is actually the first home game they've ever won in the history in the Bundesliga. Against Union Berlin, big moment for them, but they still only have 4 points, so might all be in vain.
It might, but maybe they'll pick up another 3 points now they got into the winning habit this midweek when they take on Borussia Dortmund. We shall see. Anyway, those are some of the stories we'll be touching on in this Totally Football Show.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg, online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply, 18+, begambleaware.org.
All right then, this Champions League draw business. Second time around, who have we got? Jules, your Paris Saint-Germain have got Real Madrid. Yeah, Real Madrid, who had previously got Benfica and asked UEFA to restart the draw from that point onwards. Benfica instead get Ajax. This Paris Saint-Germain-Real Madrid fixture looks... I mean, there's no end of stuff for you guys to be writing about pre-game. No, Mbappe playing at the Bernabeu ahead of his move there.
Ramos. Super League against UEFA's best friend.
Right.
The best thing would be that Kylian could already have signed his contract for Real Madrid for next season before the first leg even happened, which would be something pretty remarkable. That has happened before. We've seen players who knew they were going to play for X team before actually facing them towards the end of the current season. But that would be pretty special. Carlo Ancelotti, of course, coming back to Paris and playing against PSG. You're right. A lot of narratives between the two, and usually Real Madrid being too good for PSG in this competition.
Right. I mean, at the moment, the way things are at the moment, 10 straight wins, no, Alvaro? They're looking extraordinary.
Yeah, and 13 games without a defeat. I think that Real Madrid, at the minute, they are cruising through in La Liga. Carlo Ancelotti is not doing rotations at all because he has detected that this is the right time to put as many points difference with the rest of the clubs as Real Madrid can before Christmas. And the game has so many angles because it's also Messi going back to Bernabeu. It's also Sergio Ramos, who knows? Mm. He's been living on a stretcher so far, but maybe he's ready by February. And even Achraf Hakimi is there. So many players who have had the past with Real Madrid or with PSG facing each other. It's going to be a really nice contest, this one.
Mm. Man United, incidentally, had drawn Paris Saint-Germain the first time they did. The balls from the various pots. Instead, they're going to be taking Atletico Madrid. Is that a better draw for them? It certainly doesn't seem a good draw for Atletico, who are up against their old nemesis, Cristiano Ronaldo.
True, but they were playing against Bayern in the original draw, and I think they have avoided one of the darkest possible beasts. So I think Atletico should be kind of happy with the second draw, even though Manchester United is a very good club and we know all that. But I believe that Atletico de Madrid will be, as I said before, more or less content with the outcome of this draw.
Okay. Man United, I'm not sure, but they'll probably be happy to avoid Paris Saint-Germain, although it worked out well for them last time the two teams met.
Ralph's at the wheel.
Ralph's at the wheel.
Give him a permanent contract.
Put the paper there, get him to sign it.
Sign that thing.
Sporting are going to be Manchester City's opponents, lucky things.
That's a sexy draw, that.
Yeah?
That is really sexy game. We've seen Sporting being really attacking, entertaining. They will score, they will concede more than they score. We can tell you that right now. But it would be cool. And then there's a lot of, again, little stories within the story of the match. Bernardo Silva, Ruben Dias coming back to Portugal, who obviously were Benfica, Joao Cancelo as well. So there's a lot of nice little stories there.
Good. And Chelsea-Lille, the Eden Hazard-Joe Cole derby.
Love Joe Cole's commentary of this on BT.
What did he say?
He was like, it's just a lovely commute for the Chelsea boys. They just hop on the Eurostar, you know.
Something.
He was giving like travel advice. It was amazing. He was like, go back to the
That's what
town,
he used to do so much, I swear. He used to live
it
on
was
the
great.
Train.
I loved it.
Who else do you do imitation-wise, James Horncastle?
He's really good at it. Have you not heard your voice, James Richardson? He does it so well.
Really?
He does good John Terry in Italian. John Terry spoke to Gazzetta.
Anyway, Chelsea and Lille met in the group stage, listeners, you recall, in 2019. Chelsea winning both meetings 2-1. Juventus will face Villarreal, who put Atalanta out on that rescheduled game on Thursday, 3-2. Liverpool, who were going to be facing Salzburg, now get Inter. Still, if their last trip to San Siro is anything to go by, they may feel comfortable with that. Salzburg, instead of Liverpool, get FC Bayern, which is kind of like a local derby, Rafa.
It is a little bit, yeah. Munich is the closest international airport to Salzburg. Salzburg itself doesn't have many flights. And for people in Salzburg, Bayern is sort of the big brother. Not so much a rival, but sort of the team that they really like, would like to beat. And yeah, they played
each other. What did Leipzig think about that?
Group stage? Well, Leipzig...
you don't want to be like us.
They're not connected at all, of course, Leipzig and Salzburg, as you know, James.
Yeah.
There's no
Rasenball
ties, yeah, or anything. But no, it should be a really good one. And Bayern, I think, are happy because Salzburg play really well, play some good stuff, but they also give away a lot of goals. So I think Bayern will be quite happy.
Okay.
The opposite of Atletico Madrid in that respect.
Which draw are you looking forward to the most then? Go on, pick one.
Me? I think it's Real Madrid PSG, because at least one team that all the neutrals love will be out.
Jules, you're going with Sporting, eh, in the clash with Man City?
Yeah, I think Villarreal Juventus, that's going to be incredible. I'm kidding. Yeah. the Sporting City I like, because Rafa's already picked the game of his dreams in PSG against Real Madrid. So, I go for Sporting City.
All right, Alvaro?
I'm going to stay with Atletico de Madrid, Manchester United. These clubs, they don't used to face each other a lot to start with. And then I believe that really this is going to be a very big test for both of them, because so far in the Champions League they haven't been power forces over the last 5 or 6 years. So, you know, being in the quarterfinals is about good enough for them both right now.
All right. But as I say, the spectre of Cristiano Ronaldo hanging over that tie with his incredible track record of knocking Atleti out in this competition. That leaves you with, I think, Chelsea-Lille, James.
No, love James. That. In my parallel universe, which happened earlier today, you know, I was booking flights to Lisbon for Juventus Sporting. I was booking flights to Amsterdam for Inter against Ajax.
Ooh, that's
and now I think I'll just stay at home. But
you don't fancy Inter against Liverpool?
Well, you know, I think we were on a show the other week, Jules, where I was saying that, you know, Inter could be a bit of a revelation in this. Drawing Liverpool, I think, makes that harder, just because I think Liverpool will be in the final come the end of the season. Klopp, I love Klopp's reaction. I waited 54 years to go to San Siro, and now I'm going twice in the same year. but Inter will be a different proposition, more experienced than Milan, and certainly, as we found out on Golazzo Live, or I mean, say found out, we've been following them all season. Been playing some excellent football, James, which should make this, a cracking game.
Yeah, your Joe Cole was better, though, I would say. All right, well, also happening on Monday at UEFA headquarters, nice, were the Europa League and Europa Conference League draws. The mechanism being that this puts the third place finishers from your Champions League groups against second place side from the Europa League groups. Kind of the standout ties, I would suggest, are Rangers against Borussia Dortmund, Porto against Lazio, and Barcelona against Napoli. Woof, what do you think about that?
Yeah, this is Barcelona's new reality, and they will have to face it. And this is a possibility for them to qualify for next year's Champions League. So they shouldn't throw away this competition at all. And I also like, if I may, James, the game between Real Sociedad and RB Leipzig, because I do believe that these two teams, they try to play entertaining football, and they're going to put a hell of a fight in there. I think that this game is going to be really difficult for Real Sociedad, but it's very good to test their level as well.
RB Leipzig, who have got themselves a new manager this week, as Rafa will be revealing later on. Also coming up in the Europa League playoffs, you've got Sevilla against Dinamo Zagreb, Atalanta against Olympiakos, Zenit St. Petersburg against Real Betis, who are flying high in La Liga at the moment, and Sheriff up against Braga. Good. And then, of course, you've got the Conference League. Bear with me while I just announce that it's Marseille against Karabag, PSV against Maccabi Tel Aviv, Fenerbahce against Slavia Prague, Midtjylland against PAOK, Leicester against Randers, the Danish side. A Celtic against Bodo Glimt, who caused one of the upsets of the Conference League group stage. And Sparta Prague against Partizan Belgrade. Yay, Partizan Belgrade in the house.
Yeah.
And Rapid Vienna against Spurs, or maybe not. Maybe Vitesse. probably Vitesse at this point. Anyway, there you go. Crikey.
I didn't think Spurs could qualify. I'm a bit lost.
Well, I think anybody able to point Jules in the right direction?
I thought on the head-to-head with Vitesse, they were out anyway. So whether even if they win 10-0 against Rennes, which they're not going to do,
yes,
that's why this game is never going to be played, no?
I thought that they could still get into this draw for Yeah, that's just to stay in the Conference League.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think that in the head-to-head they are drawn and the away goal rule doesn't matter.
Right.
So I think that they can still qualify.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway, that's enough on the Conference League draw. Next up, let's talk about Sunday night's Madrid derby.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Ahí va Condovia, encima va Benzema, cuero para Asensio, Asensio para Vinicius, Vinicius la pone atrás, Benzema para gol, 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 gol.
Ahí estamos. ¿Ves cómo
y
nos gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, de Karim Benzema.
Sunday night at the Bernabeu, Álvaro, a 2-0 victory for Real Madrid. Just as it had been midweek, in fact, over Inter. They're beating all comers at the moment. And a sumptuous volley from Karim Benzema. Back in the side.
Karim the dream!
Julien the meme.
I was waiting for that moment.
People thought I was not doing it enough lately. So.
Is that what they said?
Yeah. Who are these people?
Fans, you know. Fans.
anyway, to be fair.
Karim.
If ever there was a moment... If ever there was a moment for a Karim to, show the Karim of the, that he's the cream of the crop and all that. Sorry. Yes, it was the magnificent volley which opened up the scoring in this game.
Karim the Dream. I think that he has scored this year 36 goals in all competitions. So Jules could have done it 36 times. And it's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive by Karim Benzema, considering that he came into this game with a bit of a muscular problem. And in fact, in the halftime, he had to be replaced by Luka Jovic. But Real Madrid is running away very fast with the title. Maybe too fast, because they are already 8 points ahead of Sevilla, 9 points ahead of Betis, 13 points ahead of Atletico de Madrid. And I do know that some of these clubs, like Atletico or Sevilla, they've got games in hand. But still, Real Madrid is, at the minute, the best team in Spain. And I think that Carlo Ancelotti has been quite clever. He has understood that in this moment there is an opportunity to gather points because the teams behind them, they are having rough times, rough patches, like Barcelona, for example, or even Atletico, or they just can't follow them. So Carlo Ancelotti is not rotating at all. 10 players, we do know that they are going to play always, and the only question is who is going to play on the right as a forward. Is it either Marco Asensio, who played yesterday against Atletico de Madrid, or is it Rodrigo? So with this system, and with this very clear idea of getting as many points as possible right now, Real Madrid is running away with it. I mean, they got 10 wins in a row, 13 games unbeaten, and they are having such a run in a moment when no one is particularly illuminated. I think no one is particularly great. And this moment is quite crucial for La Liga, I think, because if you look at Real Madrid, and they look like they are playing effortlessly, they are... some of them playing using their memory, like Kroos, Modric, Casemiro. They've been playing together so many years that this is working very well for them, and they have a lot of moves and passes automated. Then Luka Modric, it's a different, made of a different material. I mean, he's a great player, and he's 36 years old, and he's going to be in the next World Cup. And Carlo Ancelotti couldn't believe how good he has been. Probably he is more impressed by Luka Modric right now than during his first spell at Real Madrid. Then the goalkeeper, Courtois, is excellent. Then Karim Benzema is punctual when it comes to scoring. I spoke a lot about Vinicius this year. So, yeah, everything is working for Real Madrid. And I will say something else. Since Ferland Mendy came back, and this is no joke, I mean, Real Madrid hasn't lost the game because this player has put everyone in their own place or in their places. Alaba has become a centre-back. Militao has a better partner with Alaba. And then Nacho is on the bench and Carvajal is playing on the right. So when Mendy came, Real Madrid's defense started looking tidy, and since his arrival to the starting 11, which is at the beginning of November, Real Madrid hasn't lost a single game.
It's remarkable, isn't it? Ancelotti, coming into this job, didn't have the greatest of track records at his recent clubs. Things, of course, at Everton had been a little bit difficult there. How surprised are you at how well he's got this Real Madrid running?
I admire that. Very surprised. I'm not. I'm not very surprised because I think that a couple of things explain all this. Number one, all the clubs, they are going through a rough one. And you look at the Champions League and you see Barcelona just qualifying, going down to the Europa League, Atletico de Madrid coming second in their group, Sevilla is out of the Champions League. So there is no actual rival for Real Madrid, for La Liga title, even though I think that Atletico de Madrid still has something to say. And then everything Ancelotti does or has done in the top clubs always came with a lot of naturality, at Bayern, at PSG, Milan, Real Madrid. It's like he doesn't complicate himself too much. And I believe that this is the key for Ancelotti's success so far at Real Madrid. The fact that he's putting the players in their position, using the best one he's got available right now, and the team is defensive when they have to, like for example against Inter Milan the other day, they sit back and they went out in the counter-attack. And, you know, some other managers, they would have been criticized for that because you know how Real Madrid fans are and Real Madrid press. But I think that Carlo Ancelotti is so liked. He doesn't look for the conflict. He's a man of harmony. So if he makes some decisions, like for example playing defensively against teams like Inter, his critics are not going to go that hard at him, or critics in general. So I think this is one of the keys with Carlo Ancelotti too, and everything is working so far. And of course Real Madrid and Barcelona, they are like communicating chains in a way. If one of them is doing very badly and the other one is doing okay, it looks like the one doing okay is doing better than they are. So right, it is a little bit like this. And the fact that Barcelona is doing so badly and the fact that they are gathering all the attention for the wrong reasons, that's going in the favour of Real Madrid as well.
Barcelona are full 18 points behind the Merengues after this weekend's action. The closest rivals to Carlos Real Madrid are the two Sevillan sides, Sevilla second and Real Betis third. Oh, we had Colin Miller talking about the remarkable job that Manuel Pellegrini's done at Betis in Monday's show. Six wins in the last seven now.
Yeah, and I think that they recover from losing the Sevilla derby and losing against Atletico and Bayer Leverkusen in the space of 10 days. That was hard for Betis because they were unstoppable back in October and at the beginning of November. And then that happened and it looked like, all right, maybe Betis right now is going to sink down little by little, but they haven't. They are playing really well. Some of the players up front, they are probably having the football of their life right now, or playing the football of their life, the likes of Canales, even Juanmi, the former Southampton player who is the Spanish top scorer in La Liga. Fekir is playing really good football as well. Alex Moreno, he's been a top addition for Betis too. And hats off with Pellegrini too, because Betis is playing a really good attacking football. And Pellegrini, when he was the Real Madrid manager, I think that he went through a period of very heavy critics by Marca, especially. To the point that they were sometimes mocking him. I remember when Real Madrid didn't win La Liga after making like 90 plus points against Guardiola's Barcelona. The day after Barcelona won the league, Marca's headline was Manolo starts despedido, which is like Manolo, you are fired. And even the way they called him Manolo instead of Manuel, because Manolo can be a bad abbreviation for the name of Manuel, was pretty derogatory. And it's good to see that Pellegrini is back in La Liga, is doing very well. And another fun fact, I mean, Pellegrini has always qualified for a Spanish team for Europe, with the exception of not qualifying Málaga the season he arrived at Málaga, which I believe that he arrived to the club in mid-season. So that tells you that he knows Spanish football upside down, and probably the best Villarreal, the best Málaga, and the best Betis in many years have something in common, which is having Pellegrini on the bench.
Excellent. All right, well, a 4-0 victory over the previously high-flying Real Sociedad this weekend. Barcelona, meantime, held to a 2-2 draw by Osasuna. Anything new, Alvaro, to say about Xavi's Barca from this game?
Well, Xavi said after the game that it was very difficult to digest that the youngsters were keeping the team standing. I think that this is clearly a critic to the players with a bit more rank, a bit older. Not only the old players like Piqué or Busquets, Jordi Alba wasn't there, but also those in-betweeners like the likes of Coutinho or Frenkie de Jong, who are actually never or very, very few times actually like stepping up and having a great impact for Barcelona, even though the de Jong thing has many nuances too. And I believe that there is still hope in De Jong because he showed his quality last season from January until the end of May. I think that he was a very good player for Barcelona. But yeah, this is a team that relies a lot on the energy that the youngsters have. In fact, Nico was one of the scorers. Abde was the other scorer at Osasuna's ground. Araujo is their best centre back. Gavi is having a good season. Fati and Pedri, Barcelona supporters are waiting for them. So yeah, I think that this is a moment in which Barcelona, they will have to fight a lot to qualify for fourth in La Liga. And maybe this season is putting Messi's work last season more into perspective. Because last year, Messi scored a combined 38 goals between La Liga and the rest of the competitions. And probably Lionel Messi's goals were covering many flaws that Barcelona had. So, you know, I was thinking last week that maybe the Ballon d'Or to Lionel Messi, if it had been given a week later, after Barcelona's elimination from the Champions League, maybe fewer people would have said that that was unfair.
Right. What was it, just lastly on this, but what was the reaction in Catalonia to the 3-0 defeat at Bayern Munich, which saw them out of the Champions League knockouts for the first time since 2001. Was it kind of resignation or was there still surprise about it?
No, there was not a bigger surprise. I think that there was a resignation about it, like this is what we are now. And there were the first critics to Xavi as well, perhaps for not having been able to improve the team much from Barcelona's performance against Bayern in September that ended up in 3-0, I believe, to Barcelona's performance at Allianz Arena in December, 3-0 again. But the truth is that Barcelona looked to me slightly better in December than in September, even though there is still a long way to go. And let's don't forget something as well. And this is a remark that I've been thinking about this week because I believe that this matters. Barcelona has had many injuries, yeah? Every club has injuries. But having all the injuries in the attacking department, there is an element of bad luck in that. A little bit like Liverpool last season with the centre backs, when three or four suddenly got injured, and then it's very difficult to win games if you don't have even the second line defenders or the, you know, the deputy strikers in your team. Barcelona the other day played only with Luke de Jong up front, and I know that this is a problem that goes beyond the injuries. I know that this is a problem of sporting policy, but still having Memphis, Fati, Braithwaite, and Agüero, who is set to retire, possibly, out is a bit of bad luck as well.
Certainly is. All right, well, there you go. We'll see if their luck improves before February when they take on Napoli, who've also been hit with injuries galore currently. We'll talk about Serie A later. Next up, Jules is going to tell us all about how one team has gone 13 points clear at the top of Ligue 1.
It's the Paddy Power Football Supporter Support Line. We're talking to Burnley fan Graham. What's up, Graham?
Oh, it's Christmas, Paddy.
Not a Grinch, are you, Graham?
Oh, I love all the midweek fixtures, the quick turnaround between games.
So why so glum?
Well, it's the work Christmas party, the five-a-side drinks, schoolmates, dinner. Makes it very hard to watch all the football.
The Premier League is non-stop this December, so make the most of it with Paddy Power's Bet Builder offer. Get money back as a free bet if one leg of your Bet Builder lets you down. Paddy Power! Pre-match online Bet Builder bets only min odds 1 to 5 per leg, min 4 plus legs, max free bet £10 per day, excludes enhanced match odds, T&C supply, 18 plus, becomeaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Merci pour le décalage pour Kylian Mbappé, le contrôle de Mbappé, la roulée et le doublé de Kylian Mbappé.
Well, listener, Paris Saint-Germain with a 2-0 victory over Monaco Sunday night, extending their lead at the top of the French First Division. Remarkable stuff. Very snazzy outfits they were wearing, Jules. Gold lettering and numbering to mark Lionel Messi's Ballon d'Or win.
Some said it was a bit cheesy.
I could not
really make my mind up. I didn't
have
mind
you bought
it.
That kit?
You don't have to do it. I haven't bought the kit. They haven't sent it to me yet. I'm not going to buy it, I think. And they were crap, to be fair, with it, wearing it. So
really?
They won. Yeah, they won. But it was just like another of those performances where I thought they were second best from pretty much the whole game. Monaco playing really well,
right?
Creating more chances, hitting the post and 0-0. at least having some sort of identity. You knew what they were doing, PSG, apart from playing on the counter-attack, which is, I'm being told, this is the new thing now from Poch. Let's play on the counter-attack. Hey, it's true that you don't have any players to keep the ball and actually play a good brand of football. You need to play on the counter-attack like small teams do, but, you know, I don't know.
Jules, has that sharpened their minds at kind of PSG Central, this draw with Real Madrid, in terms of things they might like to sort out before February's last 16 matches, either in terms of acquisitions or maybe the coaching personnel or anything? Any changes you're expecting?
No, I don't think so. They really wanted to avoid the English clubs, so I think, well, certainly Liverpool and City. So on that level, I think, and Bayern, so they'd be happy. I don't think Poch is going to change now, is going to move or anything, that Zidane can come in February, halfway through the season, and even less to play his former team. So I think we can forget, unless something disastrous happens and they lose the next 10 games, then yeah, but they will continue like this anyway. Even if it's not convincingly, they will keep winning, there will be the winter break. So Poch will still be on the bench for the Real Madrid game, which, you know, in a way is a nice narrative too, because, you know, I think he's flirted before with Real Madrid and certainly likes the idea of maybe one day coaching them as much as United. So that would be interesting. But and in terms of the players, it's more about selling in January than anything else. So the likes of Kerrer and Dagba and Kurzawa and all those useless players that they want to get rid of but could not do it in the summer, they would have to do it now. But I don't think anyone will come. And then I think they'll have their fingers crossed that Mbappe doesn't do anything before that first leg against Real Madrid.
Right. Also in the Champions League draw, as we mentioned, are Lille, which is quite an achievement, Jules.
Yeah, amazing. To finish top of their group as well, even if it was a very evenly balanced group. When the draw was made, we were like, okay, yeah, Sevilla maybe slightly favourite above everybody else, but still quite open. So well done to them. They were very good, especially in the second part of the group. And we saw against Lyon on Sunday, even if it was a 0-0 draw and in the end a bit disappointing, but they played really well. They created enough to win the game. It's just Anthony Lopez in goal was very good and saves Peter Bosch's head for a bit longer, because I think had they lost that game, Lyon would have been in big trouble. But for Lille, they've got a good dynamic, good momentum. It's still Chelsea and it'll be tough. But like Gouvenec said on French TV this morning, at lunchtime, he said, this is great for us. It's going to be amazing for the fans to see all those Chelsea superstars coming. We've got nothing to lose, which is true. If they win, it's one of the biggest exploits ever. If they don't win, it's normal. So they're going to go for it. And they hope that Ikoné will still be with them. I don't think he will be. So they will sign someone to replace him. But let's hope they can still be very competitive and see if they can trouble them a little bit.
Jules, under the radar in Ligue 1 this week. Big game between Nice and Rennes. Rennes have been, a bit of a revelation.
Yeah.
Nice under Galtier go there and they win. It's a big win.
It's a big win. It's because Nice have been a bit up and down. They lost at home to Metz, for example, two weeks ago. So they had some really good performances and some bad ones. And I think this one was really important. And you could see that Galtier, you know, is quite... He looks like a nice guy. Well, he's a nice guy, but he's really tough as well. You know, he's had, when he was a player at Marseille, he had a lot of little moments of altercation in tunnels or dressing rooms. You just don't mess with him. And I think
Does he have a nickname, Jules?
I don't think so. I was trying to think because I knew you were going to ask the question.
Jean-Paul.
Monsieur Argy-Bargy.
Monsieur Argy-Bargy. Yeah, because he was a bit like that. At the height of the Marseille-Monaco rivalry, he was pretty good. And you could feel they were just more aggressive than Rennes. Rennes, who had to go to London, of course, for shopping because they didn't play against Spurs. Having to come back, it was not ideal. Although they love Selfridges. But so it was, maybe that played a bit. But yeah, I think Nice were really good on that game. It was a very convincing win.
Excellent. Rennes, this midweek, will be taking on Monaco and a full round of fixtures. Tuesday, Wednesday, and I think Thursday as well. Is that right, Jules?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Do you think Pep will overthink this game against Monaco as he did so many years ago? Oh, no, it's Pep Genesio. Yeah.
Yes, another Pep. His brother from another mother.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
The MLS season came to a close this weekend with the first ever national trophy for NYCFC from the City Football Group, of course. 7 years on from being founded, New York City champions, after a victory on penalties at Portland against the Portland Timbers. Crikey, joining us now on the line is Sam Staiskal, MLS writer for The Athletic. Sam, you were at the game.
I was. It was an incredible environment and a pretty dramatic final.
Right. It sounded, awesome. After the Timbers came back, it was literally the last kick of the game to equalize.
Yeah, it was completely insane. The Timbers weren't able to do much going forward, but as New York City kind of, as the game progressed and New York City was holding on to their 1-0 lead, they started naturally to sit back a little more, and Portland started throwing the kitchen sink at them. And literally the 5 seconds left in second half stoppage time, they were able to just lump the ball into the box, and there was kind of a mad scrum in there, and it popped out to their striker, Felipe Mora, who found himself unmarked at the back post, and he was able to put the ball in. It was the sound. I wrote that it was the best sound in sports. There's no better moment than a late equalizer or a late winner in a match with incredible stakes in an environment that's just kind of been boiling and building over the course of 90 minutes. It was so emotional. Felipe Mora, the goal scorer, was actually crying before he even reached the corner as part of his celebration. He was so overcome with emotion. So really an incredible moment, incredible scenes, and incredible credit to New York for surviving that emotional gut punch to limit Portland in extra time, get to penalties, and then win in the shootout.
Absolutely. NYCFC become the fourth member of the City Football Group to currently be holding a national title. It's remarkable stuff. I think a lot of people were taken by the scenes of former Celtic manager Ronnie Dyla stripping down to his underwear afterwards. What were the temperatures like there at Providence Park?
Yeah, so it was a very Pacific Northwest day here in the States, which is probably familiar to your listeners in England. It felt very much like an English day.
Right.
It was cold, it was rainy, it was windy. So actually before the game, you know, as part of the pregame production and for TV and for the fans in the stadium, MLS has a giant inflatable MLS Cup trophy that they were wheeling out to the field. And it was so windy that they wheeled this inflatable trophy out to midfield, and it blew over and completely ripped at the base. So they had to wheel it off. So that gives you kind of an idea of the conditions. Winds were gusting up to 40 miles an hour. So it kind of added some drama to the match. The wind thankfully sort of died down as the game went on, so it didn't affect things too much. But it was raining pretty hard all game. And, you know, I think it added to kind of the atmosphere. There were 25,000 folks there in the stadium, completely full crowd. It's the best stadium for soccer in, I think, the U.S. and Canada, for that matter. And it was really loud, really raucous, really good environment. So it added to the occasion, but if not necessarily made it the best for actually playing the sport.
Right. Excellent. In the meantime, it's been another fine season for MLS. I've seen some people raising the issue of whether the playoff route for determining the champion is still the best one for the league to use, and citing the example of a New England Revolution who posted the best regular season numbers anyone's ever had and still didn't get anywhere at all in the playoffs. They were, 12 points clear at the end of the regular season?
Yeah, they finished with 73 points, which was the all-time most in MLS. But the issue with this is that MLS this season had 27 teams. Next year, there will be 28. By 2023, there will be 30. There will be 29. So the league has reached a size at this point where having a balanced schedule is impossible. So, you know, unless you want to do every team plays every other team one time, and it's just you alternate who hosts and who's the away team per year, then you can't really do a balanced regular season schedule, and even that wouldn't be entirely balanced. So my question is, what's the alternative if you're not going to do playoffs, right? There's not really a good solution for the league. One thing that they could try and clean up is the timing of the playoffs. So New England, who you mentioned, they had 23 days between their last regular season game and their first playoff game. And basically a full month off. Part of that was for the international window in November. Part of it was due to NFL scheduling and issues. They play at the Patriots Stadium. Part of it was TV stuff. But anytime you have that long of a break, you're going to lose momentum. You're going to lose form. It's basically impossible to stay sharp. And NYCFC beat New England, right? And they had played a playoff game just a few days before. So they were sharper. They were riding a high. And then they go to New England, who had a bye in the first round of the playoffs, and they're able to advance past them. So that is something that I think needs to be figured out. But scheduling issues are complex for MLS, and I'm sort of the opinion that the league is almost always between a rock and a hard place. There's no real good solution for them.
Plus, a playoff finale is so much was so ingrained, I guess, into the way that North America does its sports that that's almost the default position. But so MLS, as you touched on there, expanding by about a team a year at the moment, Charlotte next season and St. Louis in 2023.
Yeah, it's been wild. And it seems like Las Vegas is not far behind. They'll likely be announced as the 30th team, I would guess, early in 2022, and then maybe begin play in 2024. So the expansion's been really rapid. You know, even I think 2014, there were only 18 teams in the league. So it's been quite dramatic. You know, you're talking about adding 12 teams over the course of 10 years if Vegas does begin in 2024. And that's had a few different implications on the league. Obviously, they're in more markets now than ever before. Some of these new teams that have come in have done a really nice job of being ambitious and going out and making huge signings and creating massive fan bases. Atlanta United and LAFC would be high on that list. Of two of the kind of better expansion clubs in that way. So it'll be interesting. There have been, I think, some not so positive side effects. MLS teams, they have to have a certain number of domestic players on their rosters, which I think is a good thing for the development of the game in this part of the world. But when you're adding 12 teams in the course of a decade and everybody has to have 10, 15 domestic players on their roster, well, you know, you're sort of diluting that player pool a little bit for the league. And I think that's had some implications, even as MLS has increased spending in other areas of the roster for signing players.
Is that the question now going forward for MLS, whether it keeps in place some of those regulations on salary caps, etc., which I guess were in place to begin with to kind of protect the league as it grew, but whether it's time to throw those off?
I don't think they'll ever be thrown off. I wrote a story about this right before the game, the day before MLS Cup. They'll never be thrown off because this is sort of the model that MLS has built itself on. It's a model that has allowed these teams to have their valuations go into the $600, $700 million range in some cases. It provides a level of safety and a low level of risk, and it ensures that owners, you know, can control their spend and still be respectable and still compete. I think it's fair to say, though, that MLS has kind of leaned a little bit too far in that direction. There is almost zero correlation between wages and points in MLS. And not saying that that's a bad thing on balance, but when you're a league that isn't the best league in the world, right, that is trying to attract new fans and is trying to play better soccer and is trying to become more of a player internationally in competitions against Liga MX teams, for example, then you need to raise that level. And the way MLS has structured itself, you know, even at the current level of spend, the regulations mean that the teams can't be as good as they otherwise could be, even if you just had a spending floor and a spending ceiling. But there are so many little restrictions within the salary budget that MLS does have that it just makes it hard to be efficient if you're assembling a roster.
All right. Sam, thank you so much for explaining all of that. And, I look forward to catching up with you when the next MLS season rolls around. When will that be?
Yeah, preseason opens in a month, it's not too far. The opener is February 26th of next year, so it won't be too long.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which will come in handy when Mikel Arteta finally bends the process altogether. Pre-match bet builders only get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Other T's and C's apply, and please gamble responsibly.
Monti, il numero 99, l'uomo più avanzato. Si muove bene anche Cutrone che spiana il pallone che poi finisce in rete. Con Cutrone che in qualche modo è riuscito a colpire il pallone che supera Ospina, porta alla nostra destra, l'Empoli in vantaggio.
Let's talk about Serie A now. James Horncastle, top four. Still only 4 points between them, but a slight rejigging of the order this last weekend. Inter have gone top, 1 point ahead of Milan. Atalanta have gone third. Napoli dropping to fourth. Napoli beaten this weekend at home to Empoli. That incredible injury list catching up with them.
Yeah, and also I think the fatigue from Thursday night in the Europa League, that win against Leicester, which saw them through to the playoffs. But Empoli, I think, you know, we should take our hats off to them a little bit, because coached by Aurelio Andreazzoli, the guy whose name is given to that great skill by Rodrigo Tadei, the brilliant William Defoe lookalike from late 2000s Roma. The newly promoted sides over the last few years have tended to be absolute whipping boys. You think of Crotone, you think of Benevento, just embarrassing themselves. Salernitana probably fit into that category quite well this year. Instead, Empoli and Venezia deserve some real praise. Empoli, who'd already gone and beaten Juventus in Turin at the Allianz Stadium, go to the Armando Maradona, beat Napoli a bit more opportunistically than they would have liked. A couple of weeks ago, they obviously beat Fiorentina in the Tuscan derby, which is very big for Empoli. And Liam Henderson sort of involved in that. Should be in the Scotland squad when these games come around again in February, March time. But
how much does it pay you to say that?
No more than PSG pay you and carry him.
Liam the Dream. Right. Yeah. Also, former Wolves striker Patrick Cotroni with that goal there at the Diego Armando Maradona. Yeah. Venezia, meanwhile, the other high-flying newly promoted side, who are now 6 points clear of the drop, they had a draw with Juventus, who we had thought were going to fly through their next few fixtures and maybe close the gap a little bit, or at least that was the suggested narrative. But only a 1-1 draw at the Penso there.
Yeah, they took the lead, but, you know, Morata, near post, sort of back heel, kind of difficult chance he scores, gets presented with lots of easy chances, doesn't score them. And Juventus, again, making very hard work of a team in the bottom half, you know, as well as Venezia have done in kind of overturning Roma and Fiorentina at the Penso. They were without some of their first team players going into this game. You know, Ceccheroni, for example, at the back. A nice story about Mattia Aramu, who got the equaliser, because Aramu was, you know, once kind of fated as this, you know, next big thing in Italian football, was coming through the ranks at Torino. Is from Piemonte, which is obviously where Juventus are themselves from, and he got the goal and has been very much, one of the reasons why Venezia have been doing better than expected in the top flight so far this season. But, you know, Juventus have really struggled for goals this season, and I think that's the reason why Allegri, you know, even knowing that Dybala, you know, wasn't 100% after the Malmo game, decided to risk him all over again, because Dybala's the one consistent source of goals and he's the one consistent player who keeps getting injured at Juventus.
And that's what happened this time.
And that's what happened after just 12 minutes of the game at the Penso. And I think even then you thought, okay, where are the goals going to come from? And, you know, that's been the recurring problem since Cristiano abandoned Juventus after, the first match day of the season.
Yeah, indeed so. All right, Juve getting left behind now in the race to close in on the top four. Fiorentina are now 2 points clear of Juve. Fiorentina 4 points behind Napoli, trying to get into the top four picture, but looking absolutely sensational. As you mentioned, Dusan Vlahovic with another two goals in their 4-0 win over Bologna. Massive celebrations there at the Artemio Franchi. Slightly poignantly, though, at the end, when the team went over to the Curva Fiesole, where the kind of ultras are, Vlahovic wasn't allowed to. The fans had told him, you can't come and celebrate with us. So he had to stand behind one of the benches and wait for his teammates to come back. That's where we are in the kind of impasse between him and the fans of this club, that he will leave soon.
Well, he's told the club that he will not be signing a new contract. There's been tension between the club and the agents that represent him. Can they find a solution that satisfies all parties? But, yeah, I mean, since the defeat in Venezia, when the players went to say sorry to the travelling fans, yeah, I mean, on that night, Vlahovic had to be kind of pulled away because, you know, he was subject to some abuse from a section of the travelling support, and then didn't take a penalty in front of the Fiesole in the Cagliari game He did then go and take a free kick, which he scored at the other end. He's putting up remarkable numbers. I think Jules was talking about Kareem the Dream because Kareem had paid him to say it, that he'd scored, what, more than 30 goals this calendar year in all competitions. You know, Vlahovic, I think, is now up to 32 in 2021. I think only Cristiano Ronaldo has scored more in a calendar year in Serie A history. I think he went past Luca Toni this week, did Vlahovic, from Toni's time at Palermo.
And he's got 15 for this season, which I think I'm right in saying only Robert Lewandowski at Bayern has got more of in the league. Anyway, just crazy numbers. He's 21 years old and will cost an absolute fortune for somebody.
Yeah, we're looking at 80 million. That's the fee that, if you want to get to the negotiating table with Fiorentina, there it is. I would like them to keep him until the end of the season because I think they do have a shot at getting at least a Europa League spot. You know, the way they're playing at the moment, Champions League, you know, can't necessarily be ruled out either. Why lose a player at this stage when you can maybe get a similar fee in the summer plus the money from accessing the Champions League? I suppose the counter argument is, what if he gets injured? What if he stops scoring? Is his value ever going to be higher than it is now? So these are all kind of considerations in this, I suppose, game of brinkmanship that is going on at the moment in Florence.
As Dusan himself says, you have to risk to grow. So maybe that's a message for the club. Alvaro?
No, I was going to ask, in regards to Juventus, I couldn't ask before, are they ready to spend a lot of money this winter for a striker? Because I know that they have to be very cautious when it comes to the payments now. But still, if Dybala is the main man up there, and Morata, they haven't been very reliable lately, especially Morata, I would say.
No, I think that, you know, they were, I mean, they claimed to be shocked at the lateness of Cristiano's departure. And while they signed Moise Kean, you know, Kean has been out with injury. He's still very young. I think there's a feeling that, it's too much too soon to basically expect him to be the go-to guy. Morata has been deeply frustrating, I think, this season. Especially. But in terms of money, I think it's very difficult, Alvaro, right now because of the impact of the pandemic, because of going out earlier in the Champions League in the last couple of years to Porto and to Lyon. And I think they'd have to get players out. You know, I think looking at someone like Kulusevski or Aaron Ramsey, I think only if they were able to bring in money would they be able to reinvest in January.
Well, the one team we haven't mentioned yet in this section, at least, are Inter, who look phenomenal. A week ago, it was a 3-0 victory over Roma. This time around, they took on a side in the bottom three, Cagliari, but messed them up a treat, 4-0. Lautaro Martinez got a brace. He could have had a hat-trick. He missed a penalty, as per usual. Calhanoglu continuing his exceptional form with probably the pick of the goals, would you say, James?
Yeah, although there were some lovely goals from Inter, and they are playing lovely football. I think they have more of the ball than they did under Conte. I think it was a conscious decision when Conte was coach to give the ball away a little bit so that they could transition and break on players and break on teams using, Lautaro, Lukaku, and Hakimi. But now this team feels a bit more multifaceted. Players are kind of interchanging positions, and they're an attractive side to watch. Inter, and they've scored 98 goals in 2021. They've only scored more in 1950, and there's, I think, a couple of games to go as well. So, Simone Inzaghi having praise heaped on him because, this team was supposed to be going into meltdown, and instead it's still on the up looks to have gone to another level as well. And I think a couple of reasons for that. I think as we saw at Juventus when Conte left, there is this feeling like, okay, we've got this mentality now. It's ingrained in us. We know how to win. But there's more freedom of expression. There's more levity. And sometimes in that environment, the team can hit new heights, and I think that's what's happening under Inzaghi. And I think also, yeah, Inzaghi, it's his first opportunity at one of the big three. He wants to show that he deserved to get that position. I think the players also want to show that they can win without Conte in a year where, if they do retain the Scudetto, it would be the 20th in their history, and it would get a prestigious second star, James, to go over their crest.
Realistically, do you give them any chance against Liverpool?
I give them a chance, yeah. I think as much as Inter have struggled in Europe in recent years, there has been a breakthrough this season. Even though they lost in both games against Real Madrid, they were the better side in both of those games. Alvaro, you're smiling. Do you disagree?
No, I don't.
I thought they played very good football against
Bernabeu. They were very good, especially in the first half.
Mm. Yeah. So I do give them a chance. I think they have they're a more solid team than the others. More solid than Juventus at this moment in time. More solid than Atalanta, because Atalanta concede like 20 goals in the group stage and live by the sword, die by the sword. Milan, first time in Europe in 7 years, had some injuries. I think Inter in both sides of the game, defensively and offensively, look good. And that's why I think last Thursday I kind of said I could see them getting into a semi-final. That was, of course, before a draw with Liverpool. But I told you that night,
I said to you, wait until they draw Bayern. Instead it was Liverpool, but I told you.
But yeah, no, I give them a chance, James, but Liverpool for me are the favourites for it.
Of all the 16 teams?
Of all the 16 teams, I mean, for me, the two best teams in Europe at the moment are Liverpool. Well, I mean, Liverpool, Bayern, and of course City. But City, there is always that doubt. Chelsea, I mean, you can't look beyond the English teams, and the three English teams, excluding United and Bayern, are the teams that I think are the ones set for the final four of the Champions League if they avoid each other.
Mm. All right. Well, let's speak about Bayern next as we hear about the Bundesliga.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Rafa, Bayern Munich now 6 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga. A 2-1 victory over Mainz this weekend, while Dortmund are only managing a 1-1 draw at Bochum. Julian Nagelsmann becoming the youngest manager ever to notch up 100 Bundesliga wins. What did you make of them?
Well, as has been the case often in recent weeks, they don't look quite that imperious. They did go 1-0 down, and Onisivo taking the lead, and first half Bayern really struggled, but Mainz also played really well. They've been one of the most improved teams in the Bundesliga since Bo Svensson took over at the tail end of last season. But then, again, this is often the case, Bayern in the second half, they just tried a little bit more, played a little bit more, a bit more conviction, a bit more pace, and of course they have the players to make the difference with Kingsley Coman and Jamal Musiala then winning the game for them. I think you could see, or you can see, that they haven't got their best midfield out. Joshua Kimmich, still not quite ready after his COVID infection. News of his lung being affected. It's right. Apparently not a grave and serious concern, but enough for him to sit out the rest of the games before the winter break. We've had no Marcel Sabitzer with injury. And also Leon Goretzka has been hampered by some muscle problems. So that left really Tolisso and Jamal Musiala as Bayern's only central midfielders. And Musiala, of course, is more of a creative player anyway. And that's, I think, allowed opposition teams to escape that kind of suffocating dominance that Bayern have had maybe early in the season.
Mm. Joshua Kimmich, there was a lot of talk of those lung, the damage to his lungs being quite serious, but you think by January he should be back and playing at the same levels?
We can only go by what Julian Nagelsmann has said, that apparently it's not a serious thing. Joshua Kimmich also did an interview on Sunday with German television explaining that explaining why he hadn't been vaccinated, and he has now changed his mind and will be vaccinated as soon as his recovery period is over, because the advice is not to get an immediate vaccination after you've recovered. So it's going to be a few months. But Yeah, he certainly admitted that it was a mistake not getting vaccinated, and he'd been led by fears and concerns that ultimately weren't justified by the facts.
Mm. All right, well, best of luck to him with his recovery. Meantime, speaking of recoveries, RB Leipzig, new manager for them, Domenico Tedesco coming in, former Schalke man, and masterminding a 4-1 victory at the weekend over Borussia Mönchengladbach, firmly handing over the baton of team in crisis to Gladbach, if they weren't already in possession of it, because they've now lost three in a row. Huge pressure on their manager, Adi Hütter.
Yeah, they've been playing really badly. And, you know, if you get beat 6-0 at home against Freiburg and then another 4-1 defeat away to Leipzig, things are pretty problematic. And, of course, just to perhaps make the situation more fraught, Gladbach will be taking on Adi Hütter's former team on Wednesday, Eintracht Frankfurt. So Max Eberl, the sports director, turned up in Das Aktuelle Sportstudio, German television football show, and said, "We have to show cojones. We have to stand up. We have to do all the things that you say when you're not playing well." He also hinted at the team not following orders. He included Adi Hütter in the list of people that he found were responsible, but he said the responsibility lied with everyone at the club, including himself. So Adi Hütter not immediately, I think, in danger, but getting to the point where people, I think, beginning to wonder whether it was the best appointment. Tedesco, on the other hand, great start. We know that there's real potential in this Leipzig team. We know that I think he's a very talented coach who in the past had a team with very limited ability in Schalke and was quite defensive, but I don't think that's in his nature. And I think Leipzig did a really, really smart move. I think Tedesco, from everything I've been told with people who work with him or wanted to work with him and offered him other jobs, etc., is a very good manager. And I think he should take Leipzig back into contention for further or even fourth spot.
Borussia Dortmund, as we mentioned before, only able to get a point from their clash with Bochum. Happier news for them in the Europa League draw. Rafa, getting Rangers?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the best draw. I think Rangers will look at this and believe they have a chance of knocking Dortmund out. Dortmund have been so inconsistent. They got knocked out in the Champions League. That's why they're in the competition in the first place. They lost against Sporting. They lost twice against Ajax. They haven't really been convincing at this level. So, yeah, of course, Dortmund have some really talented individuals and they have Erling Haaland, but I think Rangers have a chance. So I don't think Dortmund will be gloating after this draw. I think they'll take Rangers very seriously.
Raf, I was going to ask about Ilaix Moriba from RB Leipzig, because last season at Barcelona, he looked like the, you know, one of the fresh, good prospects of the team. He played a Clásico, he played well, and then there was a bit of a mare magnum when he left Barcelona because the club offered him decent money, but yet he preferred to go away. He thought that he deserved more. And to the point that then at the end he changed allegiance and he won't play for Spain anymore. I think he's going to play for Guinea. So it looks like he burned the bridge a little bit with Spain. But at the same time, it looked like Spain was losing a good player. But he hasn't played a lot for Leipzig, though. I mean, he's normally pretty anonymous in the games.
Yeah, he's been on the fringes of the team, Alvaro. And I mean, you understand that if you have a chance to go from Barcelona to Leipzig, I think anyone would take it at the moment, the way these two clubs are going. But in all seriousness, the reports are that he just hasn't quite adjusted to the pace and the physical demands of the Bundesliga. That he's very technical and very, very good and does some beautiful things, but lacks a little bit of robustness. And of course, as we know, under Jesse Marsch, there was a lot of running and chasing and playing without the ball, which also perhaps isn't quite his game. I think under Tedesco, if Leipzig as a team play a bit more football and go away from the Jesse Marsch blueprint, that should give him also more chances to get on the pitch again.
Well, with midweek action on the way in France and Germany, and all sorts of other delights then this weekend, that's where we'll wrap it up for today's Worldwide Football Roundup. We're back next Tuesday for our final Euro show of the year. So unmissable stuff, Secret Santa, all that stuff. It'll be happening. For now, it's many, many thanks to Julien, Alvaro, James, and Rafa, and producer Charlie, and you listener. Great week, everybody. See you on Tuesday.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.